Our next speaker is going to talk to us on violence exposure and depressive symptoms among urban youth using a growth curve analysis. Andrea Eisman is currently a third-year doctoral student in the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. She received her MPH from Michigan and an MS in Occupational Therapy in Indianapolis. Her research interests include positive youth development, adolescent resilience, violence prevention through strength-based approaches, and gender differences in factors that influence resilience. Andrea?
Good morning. Thank you for coming. At this time, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on this project, Sarah Stoddard, Justin Heinze, Sophie Ayer, and Mark Zimmerman. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. My interest in working with this group of researchers on violence exposure stems, well, in part from making sure I did not forget everything I learned in that multi-level modeling class over the summer. But in truth, it was really because of my experiences from hearing from the youth themselves, from the youth about their experiences of violence exposure, and my interest in investigating factors that may help to protect. So depression has significant influence on the health and well-being of adolescents. Depression may result in educational failure, poor social relationships, and harmful behaviors such as smoking, substance abuse, and suicide. Mental health issues generally first emerge during adolescence. In general, they tend to rise during early to mid-adolescence and decline during late adolescence. Lifetime prevalence of major depressive disorder is about 1 to 5% in adolescents, and subthreshold depression is 10 to 25%. So nearly a quarter of adolescents may suffer from some form of depression. Violence exposure is a potent risk factor for depression among youth. Exposure to violence may result in feeling hopeless and helpless about controlling one's environment, which may in turn contribute to depression. Family and community are two important contexts for youth, and violence within these contexts is associated with depression risk. But much work looking at the link between depression and violence uses aggregate measures of violence and one-time exposure measures. And really, the developmental features of adolescence may support looking at independent contributions of different forms of violence, but also looking at violence exposure over time. We use three primary theoretical and conceptual frameworks to examine the link between depression and violence exposure. The first being an ecological approach drawn from Kelly and Broffenbrenner, which incorporates multiple levels of influence and considers interactions across levels. We also incorporate a resilience-based approach because we are interested in examining factors that help youth avoid the negative trajectories associated with violence exposure. And finally, we incorporate a developmental perspective because youth at this time of life are undergoing rapid changes, are spending more time outside the home and with peers. So we wanted to consider community and peer influences in addition to family. In examining the relationship between violence exposure and depression, we also wanted to consider important sociodemographic characteristics that are associated with depression. The first is sex. Generally speaking, women experience higher rates of depressive symptoms compared to males. However, some researchers suggest that among adolescents, the difference is not as pronounced. Others suggest that there actually may be a gender gap narrowing during adolescence, so certainly that warrants consideration. The next was race and ethnicity, and the research on that is mixed. Some researchers have found that racial or ethnic minority youth have lower rates of depression, some have found that they have higher rates of depression, and some have found no difference. And finally, socioeconomic status. Among adolescents specifically, some researchers suggest that lower SES is associated with higher level of depression, and some have found no difference. Consistent with our resilience framework, we also wanted to examine promotive factors in addition to violence risk. Promotive factors enhance healthy development in the face of risk, and social support is one promotive factor that may help ameliorate the negative effects of violence exposure. And because specifically parents and peers are really important social relationships for adolescents, we chose to include those forms of social support in our model. So in the current study, we looked at the relationship between depression trajectories and promotive factors over time, incorporating an ecological and resilience-based approach. So our sample comes from Flint, Michigan, and I'm not sure if you're aware, but Flint has consistently been named in the past several years as the most violent city per capita in the United States. The sample comes from, the students come from Flint's four main public high schools, and students entering the study have a GPA of 3.0 or lower. Age at wave one is approximately 15. In this particular sample, it's 52% female, 82% African American, and 18% Caucasian. For our measures for depression, we utilized the brief symptom inventory by Derogatis and Spencer. Our community violence exposure asked two questions in terms of how often in the last year youth had witnessed violence in their communities. Conflict in the family environment, we used the family environment scale. Mother and friend support, we used Procidano and Heller's perceived social support scales. And socioeconomic status was measured using an occupational prestige score. So we utilized growth curve models. I'm not going to discuss the descriptive statistics here, but we did look at, examine the descriptive statistics and looked at the temporal patterns of the time-varying variables. We adopted a model-building strategy similar to that of Rauenbusch and Brick. We incorporated time-varying and time-invariant covariates, and we looked at the relationship of violence exposure and support over time, because as violence exposure changed over time, so too does support. So in our first model, we looked at growth, at the pattern of the trajectories. In our second model, we examined if these trajectories were different by sex, SES, and race, ethnicity. In the third model, we, consistent with an ecological approach, we looked at the independent contribution of two forms of violence exposure. And in the fourth, we looked at support over time from mother and peers. So these are the results for the entire sample, and similar to other work, depression increased during early and mid-adolescence and began to decline during late adolescence. These are results for sociodemographics. The only sociodemographic characteristic associated with the intercept or the starting point was sex. So women, generally speaking, have higher levels of depression females compared to males. So the females are the top two solid lines, and the males are the bottom two dotted lines. And also, generally speaking, Caucasians, the rates of depression declined faster during adolescence compared to African Americans, and African American males appeared to consistently have a consistent upward trajectory during adolescence. So in this graph, this is net of those sociodemographic characteristics. So again, we're talking about the whole sample. The blue line or the solid line is the entire sample, and the line above it is high community violence exposure. So youth who are in the high exposure group experience higher levels of depression. Youth who experienced high levels of conflict in the family environment also had higher levels of depression. And youth who had high levels of mother support experienced lower levels of depression. So in summary, we found that depression does change over time, consistent with other work, that there were differences by sex and race and ethnicity. Interestingly, though, we did try to model the relationship between violence exposure and depression to see if that specific relationship was different by sociodemographic characteristics, and in this particular sample, it was not. So the effect of depression, or the effect of violence exposure, was consistent across the sample on depression. That violence exposure, at least in the sample, universally increased depression risk. And perhaps most importantly, that mother support is promoted. Friend support was not associated with depression risk. So This must be because I did my PowerPoint on a Mac. I think that's why I've been a little wacky. In terms of implications, our results suggest that we may need to tailor interventions according to specific sociodemographic characteristics because, you know, as we found, there are different trajectories by sex, race, ethnicity, but not socioeconomic status in this particular sample. Families are a really important both risk and promotive factor for youth, so that supporting families can be a really important promotive factor in terms of preventing depression, especially among youth in a high violence risk context. And finally, community contacts do influence depression risk. Violence exposure influences youth across multiple levels, and incorporating community level components when considering interventions may help address the context in which youth live. Thank you.
Take questions.
Yes.
I just was wondering why you selected to exclude students who had a GPA above 3.0.
That was actually just a curious. This is was a secondary data analysis, and the primary objective of the study was to examine at-risk youth in Flint. So that was just some of the characteristics of the students. That was the whole idea, is to examine at-risk youth.
Oh, so academic at-risk.
Yes. But academic, a lot of times academic failure or academic underperformance is also associated with other risk factors. Yeah.
So that was my very question, but I have another one, which is that you looked at mother support. There's some studies that documented the critical role that fathers play, especially for girls, and I wondered why you excluded, you know,
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's actually two reasons for that. The first reason is that most of the youth in this particular sample, the teens in this sample, lived with a mother or a mother figure as opposed to other family members or guardians. And the second was because of that, I think, likely because of that, there were a lot more missing data on father support. So that was the primary reason that we included mother support. Well, it was an at-risk sample, so, you know, I mean, in terms of the city of Flint, you mean the...
How was it presented in all schools of Flint?
You know, I think it's, yes, the Flint schools are primarily, this is the Flint City Schools. Now, there are other schools in Flint, like Flint Township, that don't have the same sociodemographic makeup as the city of Flint itself, but that at least the racial and ethnic makeup of this particular sample is reflective, generally speaking, of, you know, largely reflective of the sample in Flint. Yeah.
So, given your results, what are your potential interventions? Do you foresee any potential interventions?
Well, actually, interesting that you say that. One of the things really addressing father support that came out of some of this work is there's a current intervention called Fathers and Sons. So it's focused on father support, but looking at parent support more broadly. So I think ways that we can get families together and bridge some of the communication issues between adolescents and their parents is one intervention that is ongoing, actually, currently in Flint to address supporting families. And another intervention is also engaging youth in community-level activities. So youth work with community adults to make changes or positive changes in their environment, so, you know, to hopefully change the context in which they live.